Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts right after this.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture. A better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humix Solutions with a human touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
Get ready for the 2023 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California on September 27th and 28th, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors. This two-day event will feature a combined 44 hours of live and online continuing education units for attendees in the heart of California, a trade show, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. Come join CCAs, PCAs, growers, and industry professionals at the Visalia Convention Center to hear from researchers and colleagues on the latest in agriculture. Registration is now open at progressivecrop.com/conference.
Cotton bolls have begun to crack open and final irrigation water has been applied. Insect pressure has been light, but fields continue to be monitored for whitefly and aphids. Table grape harvest continues as growers attempted to assess the damage from Hurricane Hilary. Substantial losses were reported to mid-season grape varieties due to split and rot from the hurricane. Wine grape harvest began in some areas. Apricot and cherry orchards have been pruned. Peach, plum, and nectarine harvest continued. Figs and prunes have been harvested. Pomegranates, kiwi fruit, and persimmons continue to develop. Gala apples have been harvested. Pear harvest is in full swing with Bartlett and Bosque varieties picked and packed. Olive trees have been trimmed as growers prepare for harvest. Strawberries continue to develop with some reports of mildew and bruising due to high humidity and heat. Older blueberry fields have been removed and replanted with newer varieties. Valencia oranges, grapefruit, and mandarins have been picked and packed, and District 2 lemon harvest continues. There are some orange trees that were topped and skirted. Damage has been reported in some almond orchards where trees have been shaken and nuts remained on the ground during Hurricane Hilary. Nuts on trees prior to the hurricane sustained minimal to no damage. Almond harvest continued with orchard floors cleaned and trees shaken. Walnuts, pistachios, and pecans continue to mature. Almond and walnut orchards have been sprayed for pests and weeds. In San Mateo County, pumpkin, tomato, and pepper harvest continued. Brussels sprout harvest began. Processing tomato harvest continued in the Sacramento Valley. Fungicides were applied to reduce the development of mold on unharvested fields. Pumpkin harvest continued in the Capay Valley. In Sutter County, melon harvest continued. In San Joaquin County, eggplant harvest continued. In Stanislaus County, tomato, sweet potato, watermelon, cantaloupe, and honeydew harvest continued. In Tulare County, growers continued to sell tomatoes, sweet corn, squash, watermelon, cantaloupe, and honeydew melons at local markets. Carrot harvest continued in Kern County. Broccoli, celery, cauliflower, squash, lettuce, bell pepper, and Brussels sprout harvest continued along the Central Coast. A new board of directors for the Almond Board of California took their seats on August 1st with five voting members elected this year, four of whom were incumbent. Among the 2023 board of directors is Kelly Evans, a co-op grower from Evans Farming in Live Oak, who was elected for a three-year term. Re-elected members include Paul Ewing, an independent grower from Los Banos, Alexi Rodriguez, an independent handler with Campos Brothers in Carruthers, Alicia Rockwell, a co-op handler with Blue Diamond Growers in Sacramento, and Darren Rigg, an independent handler from Minter Nut Company Incorporated in La Grande. The 10-member Almond Board has five grower members and five handler members. Between both types of members, three represent independent growers and two represent cooperatives. According to the California Almonds website, the Almond Board represents a diverse group of almond growers while maximizing the impact of almonds in California's agricultural economy. According to officials, the Almond Board of California sets policy and approves budgets in major areas including global market development, production research, public relations and advertising, nutrition research, statistical reporting, quality control, and food safety. The Almond Board is also a federal marketing order dedicated to promoting California almonds to domestic and international audiences through marketing efforts and by funding and promoting studies about almonds' health benefits. It also ensures sustainable agriculture practices and food safety. Evans, along with her husband, Tim Taylor, specializes in sustainably growing rice, almonds, and walnuts at Evans Farming. As a third-generation Hispanic woman, Evans's experience in agriculture began on her family's farm. She has sat on several boards related to almond growth, including the Growers Committee for the Almond Alliance. She has also served as an alternate for the Almond Board between August of 2022 and July this year. She also currently serves on a board of directors for the Sutter County Resource Conservation District. Stone fruit from California is coming to an end for some varieties. Yellow nectarines are coming to the end by mid-September harvest-wise. White peaches have just a few more days to go, and white nectarines are completely done. That according to Mauricio Jimenez-Castro, chief commercial officer for Prima Wawona. He says they will continue to have plums until the end of the month and peaches until the end of October. This end follows a late start to the season, though the timing of the stone fruit season has for the most part caught up by now. However, another challenge emerged throughout the season, and that was Hurricane Hilary last month. It had an impact on the fruit in terms of yields, though luckily for them, their late peach program is in good shape. There was also colder weather in the spring that impacted the yields of the fruit, so volumes as an industry were not as expected. He says, noting overall it was about 15 to 20% loss on volume as an industry, and that organic stone fruit has been more impacted than conventional. As for demand, it has been strong following the lack of fruit from the southern states and central growing regions earlier this year. He said with less product available and stronger demand, they were able to capture strong pricing over the last year. Looking ahead, Prima Wawona's program on peaches will remain strong until the end of the month, as Jimenez-Castro says that peach season goes beyond the ending of summer. Despite heavy and damaging rains a few weeks ago, a California-based table grape producer and exporter is happy to continue filling orders for customers across Asia. Brian Roberts, Director of Retail Development at Sunview Marketing International, says they are still filling orders and still taking care of their customers in Asia. Roberts, together with his colleagues, were happy with the big interest from Asian buyers in their table grapes and raisins who visited them at their Asia Fruit Logistica stand in Hong Kong recently. Sunview continues to harvest grapes despite the estimated 25 million boxes of California table grapes lost to Hurricane Hilary, according to the California Table Grape Commission. The majority of California's crop is exported after September 1st, so despite the significantly lower volumes, this positive approach to meet customer and market demand is what they continue to do, according to the company. Sunview are growers and exporters of table grapes and raisins in the San Joaquin Valley of California. They grow conventional and organic table grapes and large size raisins. They had different varieties of grapes and raisins available to taste with Asian buyers lining up for the tastings and meetings. The interest in Asia has been very good. They are sending a full line of proprietary table grapes of all colors to their markets in Asia, and the interest in their raisins is especially good throughout the Asian markets, according to Roberts. Even though a cold spring and late bloom delayed harvest by about 2 weeks, California Bartlett pear growers say they are seeing a good crop of high-quality fruit, which is sold to customers for the fresh, canned, and processed fruit markets. The harvest is ongoing in the state's two main growing regions, with the Sacramento River Delta finishing its later varieties, while Lake and Mendocino counties are ramping up harvest of the Bartlett variety, which accounts for the nearly 90% of the state pear crop. State-bearing acreage for all pears totaled 9,400 in 2022, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. As California growers harvest this season's processing tomato crop, there is concern that canneries could struggle to keep up with a backlog of fruit deliveries. Bruce Rominger, board chairman for the California Tomato Growers Association, said growers are worried about risks to fruit that cannot be processed right away. A cannery might say they are going to contract with growers to bring 200 loads a day. Well, now all of a sudden there are 400 loads that need to be harvested, and some tomatoes sit in the field too long and get rotten. To adjust for a bottleneck of trucks arriving at canners, which run 24 hours a day during harvest, Rominger said some growers may be encouraged to harvest early when tomatoes are a little green. Under contracts with processors, Rominger explained that growers can usually agree to deliver a certain tonnage during specific weeks to keep a consistent flow of tomatoes moving into canneries.
Smart growers know sustainability means managing pests at the same time they manage other priorities in their fields, which is why smart growers know Certis Biologicals. For more than 20 years, Certis Biologicals has been the world's leader when it comes to biological pesticides, delivering proven solutions that keep operations sustainable and growing. Learn more at certisbio.com.
Rice breeding is a game of numbers. From hundreds of crosses and thousands of offspring, breeders eventually winnow them down to the best one. At the California Rice Experiment Station, medium grain breeder Teresa De Leon said part of the screening involves conducting quality tests as well as taste tests. All of this takes several years. Since 1969, the station has released 58 improved varieties. Among those were two that were released earlier this year. One is a premium short-grain sushi-type rice known as Kalahari 203, and the other is an herbicide-tolerant Calrose medium grain called Roxy M521.
So usually almost every year we make about 300 crosses for medium grain, but including the short and the long grains, we make about 1,000 crosses every year. So for every single cross that we make, we plant about 10 plants from each cross. And then we bulk the seeds that were harvested from that rows of F1. And from that F1, we grow about 5 to 10,000 plants for the F2. And then from those F2, we try to select about 100 to 150 panicles. So over the years, we are accumulating several thousands of rows for those crosses. And so like just for the medium grain alone, we have like 25,000 rows that we are evaluating that came from 300 crosses. Then from those 25,000 rows, we were selecting like 1,000 rows that we would like to advance and evaluate for preliminary yield trial. And then from that preliminary yield trial, we were selecting about like top 5% where we have good yield, grain quality, and some very good agronomic traits that are really desirable that are still geared towards high yielding and high quality, like for cold tolerance, lodging resistance, early heading, early maturing rice. So those are some of the things that we evaluate as early as in the preliminary yield trial.
Rice breeders typically number varieties in their trials and don't give them formal names until they're released. Such is the case with Kalahari 203, which is known as 17Y2087 in trials. De Leon was involved with developing the variety when she was a short grain breeder at the station. She has since moved over to breeding medium grain varieties. She worked with rice producer Gordon Wiley, as well as California rice mills, to gauge market acceptance of the potential release. In blind taste tests, De Leon said the California offering was rated just behind Koshikahara, which is considered the gold standard in Japan.
The Kalahari 203 was formerly known as 17Y2087. So that name implies that it entered the yield trial in 2017. And then when I joined the station in 2018, we saw that it really has a very good yield potential. And so we tried to advance it and enter it to the statewide yield trial. So after 2 years of having good yield, it consistently out-yielded the Kalahari 203 by 15%. So in 2020, I was like thinking, yeah, this is really very promising. And so with the help of Gordon Wiley and all other rice marketing companies around here in California, we send out and offer this rice for blind taste testing and evaluation. So it was very encouraging that time because like we sent it to Lundberg, to In Harvest, California Family Foods, to Tamaki, to Kitoko, and to those Japanese ladies of Japan House in University of Illinois. And so they said that, yeah, this rice is very good. It has a hint of natural rice flavor. And one Japanese said that it has a well-balanced taste that can be eaten on a regular basis. All those evaluations are all blind taste testing. I sent it along with Koshihikari and Kalahari. So they have no idea of what they were eating. But the thing is like, you know, you cannot fool the Japanese taste. I think they have a very, very good palate because they can always pinpoint which one is Koshihikari, even they don't know what they were eating.
American consumers may view short grain rice as the main ingredient in sushi, but De Leon, who grew up in the Philippines, said Asian consumers eat it daily. Frequently, they'll eat it plain without added sauces or gravy, kind of like a comfort food. In addition to having the desirable flavor, she said Kalahari 203 has a very mild, almost buttery aroma that reminds her of popcorn. The new variety is also considered a premium rice because of its improved kernel appearance and the slightly sweet finish on the tongue.
In Asia, actually, we eat rice just like a plain rice. We steam it like without any other ingredient. And actually, on a bad days, if we don't like the dish, we just eat rice. Really, rice. So just plain rice should be, and so for us, rice should be really very appealing. It really needs to look good. The aroma should be very appealing as well. It's very similar to a popcorn aroma that you can smell while it's being cooked, or right after you cook rice, you can smell that fresh. It's buttery, but I don't know exactly the smell is really close to popcorn when you just pop up the popcorn.
M521 is the first in a line of herbicide-tolerant rices being developed by the Rice Experiment Station using traditional breeding techniques. It is tolerant to the herbicide oxyfluorophen. De Leon said M521 is very similar otherwise to the industry standard M206 Calrose medium grain or the blast-resistant version M210. The Roxy Rice system, as it is known, is being developed in partnership with Albaugh, which manufactures the oxyfluorophen herbicide.
The Roxy Rice, we are very excited. I mean, we wanted to offer this rice to the growers, especially those growers who are having some resistant weeds in their fields, because here in California, the number one problem is weeds. And so with M521, this is basically just like the M206 and M210. So it has the blast resistance and herbicide resistance at the same time. So it is resistant to oxyfluorophen. Oxyfluorophen is a PPO, or included in that PPO group of herbicide. It's not approved yet for rice. So together with Alba, this M521 will be available to the growers. So M521 is basically just like M206 and M210. We did not see any yield advantage of M521 over M206. It's only giving us 88 sacks per acre compared to 8,900 pounds per acre of M206 and M210.
One promising variety in the pipeline is 18Y2070, an arborio type that can be used to make creamy risotto. De Leon said she's particularly excited about this one because it has significantly improved yield potential for the grower. It also has improved lodging resistance, meaning the rice will remain standing as the grains mature. The only downside she sees is it flowers about 7 days later than standard arboreal varieties. Later flowering also means the crop matures later.
I'm personally very excited to this 18Y2070. It's an experimental line for arboreal type. So I believe there's a niche market for arboreal type because I believe Rice Select and Landberg and are producing some specialty rice for this type of rice. But this 18Y2070 is very promising because it's giving us like 100% yield advantage over the arboreal. It's also lodging resistant. If you have seen it during field day, the arboreal is already flat down to the ground while this one is still standing up. The only thing that I would say is that it flowers 7 days later than the original arboreal. It flowers at 90 days. But then with the yield, the milling yield is like 50% head, 66 total, which is still far better than the arboreal, which was like only 41% head rice and 64 total. So I believe this one will be a win-win for growers who will adopt this one, because on average, this 18Y2070 yields 88 sacks per acre.
The Rice Experiment Station has a limited amount of the Kalahari 203 seed available for growers who may want to plant in 2024. The station will not make available any M521 Roxy rice seed until Albaugh receives EPA and California registration for its parrot herbicide, currently referred to as ALB-2023. The company has already submitted registration requests to both the EPA and the state, and they are currently reviewing them. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
AgroPlantate is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. Agroplante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. Agroplante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. Agroplante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
New funding has been announced from the Department of Agriculture to help dairy producers affected by natural disasters. The milk loss program administered by the Farm Service Agency will compensate eligible dairy farms and processors for milk dumped due to qualifying disaster events from 2020 to 2022. Eligible disasters include droughts, wildfires, hurricanes, floods, derechos, excessive heat, winter storms, and smoke exposure. The milk loss program will help farmers and, in certain cases, cooperatives recover losses previously overlooked by disaster assistance. As equipment manufacturers look ahead to the remainder of 2023 and beyond, the landscape continues to present challenges for the industry and the ag and construction customers it serves. AEM members report demand for products across both industries has softened. However, particularly in construction, investments in infrastructure, energy, and utilities point to better days ahead, and a wealth of data suggests optimism both in the short and long term. Total cash labor expenses for the U.S. agriculture sector are forecast to be at $43.35 billion for 2023. That's based on new data from USDA's Economic Research Service. This would be an increase of 1.8% over the 2022 level of $42.57 billion in inflation-adjusted 2023 dollars. The projected 2023 level would remain below the high set in 2017. Labor expenses are an important component of agricultural production costs. For every $100 spent on production expenses, almost $10 goes towards labor. Total labor expenses include contract and hired labor payments, but exclude non-cash employee compensation. Generally, the animal production sector uses less hired and contract labor than the crop sector. In 2021, the animal production sector accounted for about one-third of total hired and contract labor expenses, with the remaining roughly two-thirds incurred by the crop production sector. This is because some large specialty crops are more labor-intensive than most industries in the animal sector. A former Virginia Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry is President Joe Biden's nominee for the post of USDA Rural Development Undersecretary. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Nominated to be the next Agriculture Department Undersecretary for Rural Development.
We work across the university with researchers in all disciplines, engineering, environmental sciences, to address the issue of food access and sustainability.
Dr. Basil Gooden, former Virginia Secretary of Agriculture and Forestry and Virginia State Rural Development Director, from a 2021 video discussing food security while a visiting scholar at Virginia Commonwealth University. His nomination for the Rural Development Undersecretary position by President Joe Biden announced Monday. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, via statement, called Gooden a widely respected, accomplished champion for affordable housing, community advancement, and economic development. Gooden's nomination now goes to the Senate Agriculture Committee for consideration. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The Fertilizer Institute is praising a Surface Transportation Board's recent notice of proposed rulemaking on providing rail customers access to reciprocal switching as a remedy for poor rail service. The proposal from the STB would provide a streamlined path for rail customers to obtain a reciprocal switching order by including specific, objective, and measurable criteria for determining eligibility. That criterion includes measures of service reliability, service consistency, and adequacy of local service. It would also standardize these three service metrics across all Class 1 carriers for the first time. Landowners have until October 30th to apply for the latest round of the USDA Conservation Innovation Grants, which are focused on two main components, according to the Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Terry Cosby.
our conservation innovation program. It really helps us with looking at how do we move to the next generation of farming. It's two parts of this. We call it classic, and we also call it on-farm trials. The classes is most of the ones where we work with partners to look at new technology and how do we develop new tools. And we always talk about this next generation of conservation efforts. And then we get into the on-farm trials, and that's where we work with producers and look at more adoption. And then we also look at evaluation of these conservation approaches. And all that's doing is helping us build new technology, look at new techniques, new approaches. This program is very important. NRCS is a science-based agency. Through a lot of this information, that helps us build our conservation standards on how we offer other practices to other producers. Because if we can get these things on the farm in a specific geographic location, the farmers in that area also can use the same thing. So it really helps us with our technology transfer. And so it's a very important program to us.
Terry Cosby, director of the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. For questions and sign-up details, see your local county NRCS office.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.